Okay, so we have just a few more points to add on the whole question of Shnayim Sha'asor. And one of the issues, just to fill in a little bit more, and again, we're trying to figure out what exactly is really the nature of this exemption. Is it about a lack of connection to the action, or is it about the action itself being flawed and incomplete, and what are the broader implications of that? So one topic just to return to for a moment is the unusual situation of ze yachol, ze eino yachol. That if you have two people doing something together, and one of them could have done it by himself, and the other one could not, so how do we view that? We know that lahalacha, or machlokas and aside, but lahalacha, we assume that the exemption is generally when it's ze yachol to ze yachol. It's a one-person job, and they're spreading it out among two people. If it's ze'eino yachol, if they could not do it by themselves, they need two people to do it, so then that's not an exemption, and possibly because, as Rashi seems to say, that's the normal way of carrying it, so then that's not subject to an exemption. But what about in the middle? If one person can do it, ze'eino yachol, and the other person could not have done it, ze'eino yachol, so the Gemara says everyone agrees that there's a chiyuv, and then the Gemara asks, which one is chayiv? And the response is that the one who's able to do it is the one who's chayiv, and the one who's not able to do it is in the category of misayeya ein bo mamish. And if you recall, Tosfos says, well, what was the question really? The question really was, maybe both of them should have been chayiv. Stefan points out it's not a grammatical shidduch for the Gemara. The Gemara does sound like he's saying which one of them is chayiv. Hey minayu. But in any event, Tosfos says it can't really be read that way, because if you thought the question could have entertained the possibility that the weaker guy would be chayiv and the stronger guy would be pater, says Tosfos, ain't that far. That's that can't be. So we mentioned one approach why perhaps it could be this far, that if it's all about kederech, so the yachol, the strong guy, we'll call just for simplicity, we'll call the yachol strong, and the yachol weak. So the strong guy is acting shalom kederech; he's getting help when he doesn't need it. And the weak guy is acting kederech because he always needs help, so therefore maybe it makes sense that he's chayiv and the primary guy is not chayiv. Even though one would have thought maybe the issue Tosfos is coming at is it sounds funny to say that one guy's helping and one guy's the main mover. So to say the helper should be more chayiv than the main mover seems illogical, seems to contradict the idea that we have shlo yehei tofel chamer min ha'ikar, that the secondary person shouldn't be more stringent, shouldn't be treated more severely than the prime mover. But I think Arya brought this up last time, just to fill in, that the Baal HaMor suggests that there is also a reason to have such a distinction, because perhaps we should look at how much koach is being used here. That apparently the strong guy is not really putting all his effort into this, because he could have been doing it by himself. Now he has this guy helping him, so he's not using kol kocho. While the weak guy is using kol kocho, he's putting his all into this, and he still needs help. That would always have been the case for him. So therefore, perhaps that's a reason to treat him more stringently. Let's go to that perspective, that if you're putting all your effort into it, that makes you chayiv. And if you're not really putting all your effort into it, maybe that's a svara lahakya, although that still needs to be filled in a little bit. Who cares how much effort you're using? Why exactly is that necessarily a shear? Why exactly is that necessarily relevant?
Hi. Well, if we say that it's talking about the action, the apogam and the action, mm-hmm. perhaps you'd say there's less of a apogam when someone is putting all their strength into it.
So you say, by definition, if you're trying, if you're maxing out your abilities, so then it has to be a complete action? Maybe. So you say, emphasizing on that end and not on the other end. The fact that the strong guy is not using all of his efforts, so that we can't really address, because since when does that make a difference in a malacha? A malacha is somehow less because you're not working so hard. When does that really impact? So it seems to be that the thrust at this point is based on the weak guy. So because he's doing everything, so you can't say it's in a complete mess. Perhaps. It's also interesting, Tosfos on Daf Tzadik Gimel, Tosfos suggests that when we talk about Ze'ein Yachol, so he said that for simplicity's sake, we'll call him the weak guy, but Tosfos asserts that's not necessarily true. Right? He's not necessarily weak, he could be strong. But if he's trying to lift it with one finger, if he's trying to do it in a way where he's not able to lift more than that, So then that becomes called Eino Yachol, even though really he's inherently capable, but he's doing it in a way that couldn't have successfully done the action, so that puts him in the category of Eino Yachol. That also perhaps seems to define the Maisa a little more, that if you're doing the Maisa in a way that is insufficient for you, that you're capable of doing more, but you're not allowing that to happen, so then that does seem to define it maybe more Maisa-ically. But it's interesting, there's also a tshuva and a Dvar Yehoshua, who we've mentioned a few times, the Dayan from Tel Aviv, Dayan Ehrenberg, who raises the following question. Right? So think about it this way. If we say that you're chayiv, if two people are doing melacha together, right? Are they chayiv or are they potter? So it depends. If it's zeh yachol, then they're potter. If it's zeh eino yachol, zeh eino yachol, so then they are chayiv. If it's zeh yachol, zeh eino yachol, so then the eino yachol is potter and the yachol guy is chayiv. Right? So let's say we want to bring this case to Bezdin. So you have only one of the two people in front of you, and you're trying to nail him for chutzah. So we know that this guy is eino yachol. Right? So that we can establish. So he could not have lifted this weight by himself. So if the other person is also eino yachol, so then they're both chayiv, so this guy is chayiv. But if the other guy is yachol, so then that guy becomes chayiv and this guy becomes potter, right? Which is interesting if you think about it. So now let's say you're only trying this guy, who you know is begetter eino yachol. And he says, oh, but you don't have my partner here. If you met my partner, you'd see that he was strong, and he could have done it by himself. So that should get me off the hook. So what would the Bezdin say to such a guy?
Could be using his pinky or something like that.
Maybe. So would that matter?
Both of them are in a yachol.
So that would make him together in a yachol, even though he actually is yachol. But how would you prove that in order to be mechayev this guy's skila? Why would you necessarily assume that? You'd have to prove that. So it's an interesting question. In the context of that, he assumes, the Dvar Yehoshua, that this, the Bezdin has to evaluate based on the weight somehow, even though they don't have the other guy in front of him. And the assumption seems to be that it gets established by the guy they do have in front of him that it's Eino Yachol treated here. So the assumption that the other party is bigger and therefore Yachol, that assumption apparently they don't have to factor in front of them. But it's an interesting point to ponder. Right? The fact that this Eino Yachol flips from Chayiv to Pater based on who his partner is, and that does seem to throw into doubt any kind of prosecution of him if it's happening by itself. Okay. So now let's turn for a second to a question we mentioned briefly, the question that was raised by the Simchas Yontif, the Ma'arit al-Ghazi. A very significant question. No question this could easily be the scenario. What happens if the other person is not a Bar Chiyuva? If he's not Jewish, or if he's a Katan, or if he's a child, so he's not Chayiv in Hilchos Shabbos technically. So what does that do? Do we still have an exemption of Shnayim Sha'asol? Does it matter that the other party is not subject to Hilchos Shabbos? What do you think?
We already said this depends on the Kira.
So it probably depends. Right? How would it depend? Because if you say that it's all about the chiyuv, who do we assign it to? So if there's nobody sharing the chiyuv with you, because he doesn't have the responsibility, it's slightly evocative of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. Right? The whole assumption that if you hire somebody to do Aveira, it's not your liability because he should say no, he shouldn't listen to you. So that's only applicable if that is the case by him. If he has a reason to say no because he's subject to the Aveira or he knows about the Aveira or whatever it is, so then fine, we might say in Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. But if he doesn't have the Aveira or if he doesn't know about it or for whatever reason he doesn't have any reason not to listen to you, so then the logic might not apply. So here also, for saying that you're splitting the Chiyuv, if the other party is not subject to the Chiyuv, then maybe that shouldn't be relevant. Hi.
It's possible you would never even be chayiv for the maisa that you did. If it's something that requires the people, then regardless of whether or not you're doing something for you or not, maybe the amount that you would be partaking in shouldn't be considered enough to be chayiv.
So regardless of who the other person is. Right. So that's the way the Yad Sofer approached the issue, and a few others as well. The Imre Bina. The Imre Bina was the Kalash Rav of Yerushalayim. The Yad Sofer was written by Rav Moshe Sofer, which is a name you might be familiar with as the identity of the Chisam Sofer. But this is a descendant of his, also named Rav Moshe Sofer. So the Yad Sofer in a tshuva, so he assumes that it shouldn't make a difference. So similar to what Yosef is saying, because he works off the assumption that Rashi holds that the issue is kederach. That if the whole issue is that you're not carrying it in a normal way, then it really doesn't matter who it is that you're not carrying it normally with. If you're not carrying it with the Bar Chiyuva, with the non-Bar Chiyuva, it's all the same thing. Bottom line is, you're doing something unusual, so there shouldn't be a chiyuv. And for that reason, he also disagrees with the position of the Chesed Lavram that we mentioned yesterday. Right? Yesterday we said that the Chesed Lavram, which is an often quoted shita in the sugya, that he assumes that the concept of Hashnaim Shaso is only applicable to a malacha that has a shear, a minimal shear, or at least some stages involved, and that therefore it's significant that it's taught in the context of Hotzah, because there has to be something to split. It has to be either that there's a minimum amount or that there are different stages. So then we could say, well, we're not sure how this lines up. Maybe you only have half and the other guy only has half. We're not sure how exactly to assign the various parts of this malacha. But if the malacha doesn't have any minimum, that you could keep getting smaller and it's still a full chiyuv, so then there is no such exemption. Then they're all chai the same way. So the Yad Sofer disagrees with that because he assumes that it's all about orche, about kederach, and therefore that would be true no matter what malacha we're talking about. If you do the malacha, shelo kederach, so then there's going to be a chiyuv for that anyway. So what about the question of whether this applies specifically to Shabbos or not? So is this limited to Shabbos? Do you find this by other Isurim? So I think you saw some sources that talk about that a little bit. The Kadjig Lover Rav, the Sefer Eretzvi, and the Avnei Nezer, his Rebbe, they both assume that this is limited to Shabbos, and they connect it to the principle of Kila Achar Yad, when you're doing something in an unusual fashion. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow, about whether that's connected to Malachas Machshavas and how exactly that plays out. And if you look at various discussions in the Rishonim and later, so you see different things. So for example, the Bechor Shor in Chulin assumes that when you're dealing with Oso V'Yas B'no, shechting the parent, the mother, and the child in the same day, so that it doesn't make a difference whether it's two people holding the knife, one person holding the knife, it's the same story. But the Ritva in Kedushin, which I think was on the Mar Makomos, the Ritva talks about the prohibition of Shchutei Chutz, if you shecht an animal outside of Yerushalayim. So there the Gemara has a pasuk to say that you're pater for that. So they ask the Ritva, why do I need a pasuk? We already know Shnayim Shaso. So he explains why you have to have an extra pasuk, but his assumption seems to be that this applies to Kol Torah Kula. So we find a lot of back and forth. We find different applications. And there's an interesting comment in the Menachas Chinuch. The Menachas Chinuch in Mitzvah Tesvav, Menachas Chinuch writes that we have a different Isser Hotzah in the Torah. It's not about Shabbos. We have an Isser Hotzah by Karban Pesach. If you're going to take the Karban Pesach outside, so then that's an Isser Hotzah. So what happens if you're talking about Shnayim Shaso? Shnayim Shaso by Hotzah. Does that make a difference? Is that a Ptur? So it says it depends what we're talking about. That if it's Zayachal, Vizayachal, let's say a situation like that, so that is not a Ptur, because that, he says, is specifically by Shabbos. That whole sugya is in the context of Shabbos. But if it's Zayachal, Vizayno Yachal, so the Eino Yachal is considered to be Misayaya, like the Gemara says, and therefore Misayaya is a principle, he says, which is not limited to Shabbos, and therefore that would be an exemption for the Eino Yachal. So that's an interesting point. We'll have to come back to that in a second, considering the whole role for Misayaya. So there is a very important discussion about this. Yes, sir?
Is this question different than the, you mentioned the Minchas Chinuch, like with this whole Basar B'chai thing?
So
is that a different question?
He asked the question separately, so it's consistent with his question because his assumption that it's not automatic by the laws of anything else, it's just a principle in Shabbos. So the fact that he raises the question in the context of Bishul Basar B'chai is consistent with that.
If he assumes that it doesn't apply to everything else, why would he even assume?
You have to figure out, is there some kind of inherent reason in any given principle why it might be true? So there he has the suffix. Others assume, as you mentioned, the Rav Scheinberg thought that it should apply to everything else, and then he tried to figure out what the difference is. Everyone comes from a different vantage point here. It's interesting. You see the assumptions that they're working with are simply not the same assumptions. That one sefer will come at it from the assumption that it should be a pater, should be tour by Chalotar Kula, and then try to figure out why their area is different. And others will come with the opposite assumption, and you have to try to work backwards to figure out what their premises are. Hi.
According to Rashi, that's all about Or Chayim. Mm-hmm. So the heter would not apply to other cases. We don't have that concept.
So that's what we'll talk about tomorrow a little bit about Kalach Yad and Melechas Mechsheves. Is that something that's unique to Shabbos, or is it not? And that probably also connects to a distinction between goal-oriented mitzvos, goal-oriented averos, and action-oriented averos.
I've never seen anybody say, like, cook the milk and meat with your left hand. I never
right, so especially that might be the point, that maybe cooking meat and milk is very likely a result-based aver.
I've never heard in any other area
of halacha. So maybe they just haven't brought it up. Maybe they should be. Maybe if they're clever enough, they should be. But it depends on the area that it might be. Then in Achadami, then it depends on which aver we're talking about, and there might not be one rule, which we'll see a little bit more tomorrow, because we'll bring it in the context of Melechas Machshavas and see if it's connected to that specifically. There's a little bit more to say about it, so we'll get to that tomorrow. So in terms of this point, so there is an important essay about this by Rav Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi. So just to keep things straight, we just referred to two similarly titled Sefer Svarim, the Kadosh Glover Sefer. The Kadosh Glover Sefer is called Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi. Rav Shechter Sefer is called Eretz HaTzvi. So in the Eretz HaTzvi, so Rav Shechter asserts the following. Right? So it's been pointed out already that the drush of the Gemara from Parshas Vayikra, the Pasuk is not even talking about Shabbos. Right? The Pasuk is talking about Karbanos. So, how do we apply this to Shabbos at all? And if you're going to tell me that, well, Shabbos has a korban, so it applies to a korban, the pasuk's really talking about korbanos, so that would be very well and good, but we certainly assume that they're patur mimisa also for the malacha. So, what's the ptur for misa if the pasuk is coming about a korban? And if it was specifically talking about Shabbos, okay, then we could come from that direction. We have a pasuk that's just talking about korbanos, and somehow we assume that it means your pater for a korban and for misa for a malacha on Shabbos done in this way. So how does that whole derivation come about? So as Rav Shechter explains, says presumably you have to say like this, that the pasuk is telling you that when a misa is done by two people, so then we're not able to connect that maisa to any one person. And therefore, a karbon, which is all about the kapara for that one person, is exempted from that pasuk. So, karbonos, yes, in general, would have this exemption. But that reflects something back on Hilchos Shabbos. Because since, as we've been noting consistently from day one, that Shabbos has this focus on a maisa specifically, that if you need to have a connection to a maisa, so then shnayim shaso is not that. That's what the pasuk tells us, that shnayim shaso means that nobody has a full connection to the maisa. And Shabbos is all about the maisa of the individual. So therefore, yes, it's an exemption from the korban on Shabbos, and it's an exemption from misa as well, because it undermines the very concept of malacha on Shabbos. So therefore, building off that principle, Rav Shechter asserts that he thinks that it means the malacha is simply not connected to the individual. And therefore, in terms of the application, he says it means that it applies to Shabbos and to Yontif, because it goes to the heart of what it means to do a malacha. So even though Yontif is a lav and Shabbos is a karban and misa, it doesn't matter. But it doesn't necessarily apply to other concepts beyond Shabbos. And on Shabbos, it means that the action is actually mutter min ha-Torah. So a number of questions that we've raised so far, right? Is the action actually mutter or just pater on a level min ha-Torah? Does it apply to other things? Does it apply to Yantif? So Shechter assumes these are all connected in not necessarily obvious ways, but that basically it means it can't have a malacha under this category, under this heading, in this context. So therefore, on Shabbos, it's mutter daraisa completely. It applies to Yantif as well, but it doesn't necessarily apply to other aveiros.
How does it answer the question of why Shabbos is in a carbon context? Why we're
because the pasuk, what the pasuk is really telling you is that a maisa that's done by two people, the maisa can't be connected to one person. So therefore, the carbon doesn't come because the carbon is all about one person having liability for this. Now, working off of that, our Gemara then is saying, well, if the maisa can't be connected to one person, so then that doesn't work for Hilchos Shabbos either. Hilchos Shabbos is all about maisim, is all about people doing maisim, and therefore a malacha is fundamentally flawed if that's what's going on. So if the malacha doesn't work, it means it doesn't work for Yantif either. It means it doesn't work at all as far as Shabbos is concerned. It's mutter min ha-Torah completely. And it's limited to Shabbos because other areas aren't necessarily driven by this type of consideration. Stephanie, have a question?
I don't get it so much. Like,
it's a little bit complicated because, you know,
the connection between you can't pin on anybody and Shabbos is action-oriented.
Because Shabbos is all about saying that the individual has disturbed his rest. Or the individual has done a malacha and is no longer at rest. So if this action, even if it happens, right, it's considered to be an aveira, or it's considered to be an action of significance, but it can't be connected to one person. So then that one person didn't disturb his rest. So the very nature of the Issur Malacha that we have on Shabbos is not taking place. It's not a compromise.
Like if I eat a cheeseburger, that's not...
So that might be different. Yeah, maybe eating cheeseburgers is not so mice dependent. Maybe as long as that cheeseburger got inside of you, that's considered to be an aveira, maybe. You know, it could be any individual aveira, you still have room to question. Maybe this also has a principle like this. But as a general rule, it'll really be about Shabbos. So both l'kul l'chum, it'll be limited to malacha, but it'll include yantif, it'll include other aspects of the Isser on Shabbos. It'll mean that it's mutter min ha-Torah on Shabbos and on yantif, and it doesn't necessarily extend to other things. So working off that premise, he also goes on to say that the question some have asked about whether this should be applied to mitzvos. What if you want to do a mitzvah with somebody else participating, somebody else holding it at the same time? So his assumption is that that might work, that should work as a basic rule, because if the mitzvah is accomplished, it's accomplished even if we can't necessarily consider it to be the ma'isa of one person. There is a nice contemporary sefer called Sifsei Shlomo, where he discusses the question of mitzvos as well at some length, and he assumes that maybe this connects to the suffix the Mishnah Melech has. Mishnah Melech has the question in general that if you do a mitzvah shelo kederech, is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah? The same type of tour we sometimes have by the Averis addresses a little bit Stefan's question about whether you find this idea of shelo kederech by other Averis. So we find it in a different way, let's say in terms of achila, that if you eat something shelo kederech hanasan, so then that's usually an exemption as well. So Mishlo Melech has a suffix, let's say you eat matzah shelo kederech achila, shelo kederech hanasan, can you fulfill a mitzvah? So that's a little bit of a question what to read from the Gemara. So that's an open suffix in general. So if that's the case, so then you could say that maybe Shnayim Shaso should be viewed that way. If it's all about that type of an exemption, so then it might theoretically enter into this equation. So Rav Shechter comes at it from a different angle. He assumes that L'maisa, it's not an exemption except for Maisim, and from my worry, I have a specific Maisa requirement, and therefore mitzvos in general don't have this exclusion. Steph, you're still trolling.
What's that, eating matzah, what does that even mean?
It means that if you, well, let's say you were to wrap it up in a piece of paper, for, you know, what does it mean practically?
Yeah, what's the case of eating it?
Yeah, let's say if you were, or if you were to eat it in a way that most people wouldn't eat it, like if you would pour sand on it or something like that. You know, if you would do, if you'd wrap it up in a piece of paper, if you would, there's all kinds of ways you could necessarily...
The Gemara's thing is swallowing it whole.
Right. So, you know, that this, it creates a certain tension nowadays when there's all kinds of questions about how much matzah you have to eat and you have to eat it Pesachas. Right. So that's a Pesach issue. But in any event, so that's brought into this discussion. Elof Lecha Shlomo, Shlomo Kluger, in Simon Shinayin Beis in his Shuvas, he has a discussion where he assumes that, let's say you have, you could imagine this, let's say you have a father and son want to hold the Lulav Netzarim together. So he thought that was problematic because he thought they're both capable of holding it, Zayachol v'Zayachol, and that he thought that was a disqualification for mitzvahs. Just give a little synergy here. So there is a discussion about this also in the Sefer Ohalei Shimon that we mentioned yesterday regarding Hanukkah candles. Right there also you could imagine it coming up. Let's say you have an older man who wants to light Hanukkah candles for himself, but his hand shakes. Right? So he's not comfortable doing it completely by himself. So he asks somebody to hold the candle together with him. Right? Or you could easily see that happening with a child also. And so your child insists on participating in lighting the Hanukkah candles. You don't trust him to do it by himself. So you hold the candle together with him. So is that a disqualification? So here he assumes, so a little bit of synergy to last semester, so he assumes also that maybe it factors in to the question of what's the goal of Neros Hanukkah? Is it a mitzvah of hadlaka, that you should do an act of lighting? Or is it a mitzvah that you should have candles lit, and it's a result-oriented mitzvah? If it's a result-oriented mitzvah, it probably shouldn't matter. But if it's a action mitzvah, then maybe we care more if the action is somehow compromised. Yes, sir?
And shouldn't the whole nature of the discussion of mitzvahs be entirely different? Because you also have the concept of Rovam Hadras Melech. You mean, like, you can bring in other, like, there's so many other factors, being Motzi somebody else, or just, yeah, they also
Since we have a notion that many people could do a mitzvah together already, so then...
Yeah, I mean, like, it's
right, so maybe that depends on what kind of mitzvah it is. You know, you could flip, for example, the Chesed Lavram Svari here, that you could say that a mitzvah, which isn't divisible at all, so then we could do it together. Now, clearly not all mitzvahs work that way. So if you have matzah, for example,
right
so you can't take one kizayis of matzah and divide it up among two people already, but you know, however much you have, you can't keep dividing it. While a Shemei Ka'ono-oriented mitzvah, so that you could have 1,000 people in the room and one person speaking, they could all be yotzei. So we have different mitzvahs in terms of that, so maybe it might make a difference what kind of mitzvah we're talking about. Okay, so that's an important point. Rav Schechter also goes on to discuss something else, which is important in light of other things he has written specifically. He says this also affects the question of, it's very kedai to read it, but I think it's Simon Dalid in the Eretz Hatzvi, where he talks about this and related issues. So this is a good background, by the way, in general. If you're holding in the Malachas of Shabbos, I'd recommend reading this essay in general in the Eretz Hatzvi. Says this also affects another question. That so let's assume that Shnayim Shaso is Mutter Min HaTorah, that's his presumption, right? That it's Mutter Min HaTorah. But we know it's also Midrabanan. However, there's still a room to ask a question. What kind of Issur Drabanan are we talking about? Because, as he explains at length in this essay, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, there are different Issurim Drabanan, different kinds of Issurim Drabanan. So sometimes you have an Issur d'Rabbanan, which is a Malacha d'Rabbanan. That it's basically a Malacha. It just, for whatever reason, doesn't meet the standard to be Asur Min HaTorah. But it's also on the rabbinical level. And sometimes you have an action which really isn't a Malacha at all. It's prohibited for reasons of a Gezerah. It may lead to an Avera on Shabbos, so Chazal prohibited it for that reason, but it's not, in any sense of the word, a malacha. So this, as he goes, you can look at it, and we'll talk about it more. He points out a couple of nafkaminas lahalacha in terms of what we allow for a cholash ebo sakana, in terms of the idea that bein hashmashos, so we say there's no gezeira that applies on Shabbos, bein hashmashos. There are many, many different details that fit into this question. It's an interesting topic in of itself. So in that context, he says, what's the malacha done? B'shutfus, what's Shnayim Shaso? That's also midrabanan, but how? Is it a malacha d'rabanan? Or is it a gezeira d'rabanan? So he assumes, based on his premise, that it's more likely to be a gezeira drabanan, because if it's flawed as a malacha, so then it'll be flawed on a drabanan level as well. It won't be a malacha even drabanan. So therefore, the fact that it's asur midrabanan must mean that it's a gezeira, it's likely to lead to a malacha, but it itself is not a malacha at all, and that has various nafkaminas. Okay, there's a lot more to say about this, you know, in terms of kinyanim also, in terms of other things, but we need to move on. So I will also just mention, especially because I put it on the Mar Makomos just so you should know about it, and there were some questions about it, that clearly there is in the background here also a broader concept of Misayaya. Right? The idea that our Gemara seems to say Misayaya ain bo mamish, that if you're only in a helper role, so then that's not so significant. And other places in Shas, it's not so clear that that's the conclusion. It's interesting because this also synergizes with our topic of Lifnei Iver and also with our topic of Chedei Kedei Shiyizke. It kind of is a bridge between all the topics. But what exactly is the status of somebody who plays a assistant role? So we mentioned in Hilchos Lifnei Iver there is a Issur Drabanan called Misayeya, that if you are crucial part of the Aveira, what you would call Ze'eino Yachal on the other guy's part, and you make it possible, so then you're in violation of Ne'iva Men HaTorah, generally. But if you're not crucial, he could do it without you, so then that's the Issa Misayeya. Not exactly the same concept, but a similar application. So here we find the Gemara says, Misayeya in Bo Mamish. So what exactly is the story? And it has practical implications. For example, one of the major areas where this comes up, Lahalacha, one of the major debates, if you got to see the Shachar and the Taz a little bit, and put on the Mar Makomos. So there is a question as follows. So let's say a woman has to go to the mikveh Friday night. So she realizes, we generally have a policy of minig that a woman who goes to the mikveh, so she's not supposed to have anything that's going to be a chatzitza, anything that's going to interrupt between her body and the mikveh. And therefore, we have a minig to cut the fingernails. But the fingernails should not be long. Whether or not that's actually required, make it in, not our subject today, but that's our minig that women should have fingernails that are cut before going into the mikveh. So what happens? She shows up Friday night to the mikveh, and she realizes, or the mikveh lady realizes, that she hasn't cut her fingernails. So do we say to her, sorry, you can't go to the mikveh tonight because you have long fingernails? Or is there an Eitza here? Hi.
Just a side point. Do girls go to the mikveh on Shabbos? Is that okay?
Yes. So in general, we're very proud of that because in my neighborhood we just built a new mikveh for use Friday night because the other one is too far a walk.
I thought you were like, fixing something. I don't know.
Sorry?
Aren't you like fixing something?
Oh, is it a tikkun? So when it comes to kalim, it's considered to be fixing something. So we're not tovel kalim on Shabbos, which is an interesting discussion from another angle. Maybe we'll get to that sometime in the semester. But in terms of a woman going to the mikveh, she does go on Shabbos, and Chassidish men go as well. I mean, in terms of those who have a practice of going every day, go on Shabbos morning too. But in terms of a woman, yes, she does go Friday night, and we recommend that if that's the time, then she not delay. She goes Friday night as well, and like I was mentioning.
Well, it wasn't mitzvah rab, not for her to go to the mikveh, but to facilitate, I guess, the
peruvu.
Right.
Yeah, that's all connected, right. So we, to mention, in our neighborhood, we just built a new mikveh, just opened up, that because the other one was too far of a walk Friday night, so now just davka for Friday night, there's a mikveh open for that purpose. So, yes, so the question is, so let's say she shows up Friday night and her fingernails aren't cut. So the Shach says, okay, that wasn't so ideal, but there's a way to deal with it, that if there's a non-Jewish woman available, or non-Jewish anybody available, so then you could ask the non-Jew to do it, and he explains why he thinks it's mutter, it's a mir l'akum, it's a shvus, and then maybe the whole action itself is only a shvus. We'll maybe get into that, about whether cutting nails on Shabbos itself, is that nisa d'oraisa or nisa d'rabbanan. So there's reason to say it might be a nisa d'rabbanan, it might be a malacha shinitzricha l'gufa. So putting all that together, Shach says, okay, when you're stuck in this situation, you can have the non-Jewish woman cut the nails. So the Taz says he thinks it's a problem. That he thinks that this is really considered to be as if you're cutting your own nails. Because in order for the nails to be cut, the woman's going to have to stick her hand out. She's going to have to make her fingers available. And that is a problem. She is essentially a partner in this process. So therefore, he wasn't ready to allow this. And the Shach responds, and he argues back and forth, because the Shach has a commentary, another sefer, where he's able to get his next punches in when the Taz attacks him. So the sefer called Nekudas HaKesef, which sounds like a backhanded compliment. So the Terei Zav is columns of gold, and Nekudas HaKesef means a slight point of silver within the gold, where you can argue. So the Shach and Nekudas HaKesef responds the whole machlokas back and forth between the Shach and the Taz. So this issue really seems to be an issue that Rishonim addressed elsewhere. Because the fact is, again, this is all in Marma Komos, that there is a range of perspectives you see from different sugyas about Misayaya. So our Gemara has just said Misayaya and Bomamish. But elsewhere, you find different impressions. On the one hand, the Gemara in Beitza says that Amemar allowed, in the context of Refuah, he allowed somebody who has a major issue with their eyes on Shabbos to have a non-Jew put some kind of a lotion or whatever it is in their eyes, which presumably also would require them making their eyes available. And there, we're not worried about Misayaya. Misayaya ain't bomanish. But when it comes to having one's payas cut off, the Isser of Baal Takif, so the Gemara says in Makos that prohibition applies not only to the barber, but it applies also to the person whose payas are being cut off, that he makes himself available to have his payas cut off. So that's a violation because of his siyua, because he's misayaya, so he is a part of this avera as well. I was saying that I had a haircut the other day and somebody mentioned it. So I said, thanks, I did it myself. Meaning halachically I did it myself, because the Gemara says that if it was a prohibited haircut, I would have been liable for it, as if I did it myself. The makif and the nikaf are equally a part here, so you can take credit for the haircut also. So is that true? So is it really the same kind of story? So why is it by the haircut we say that the misayaya is also a part of it? And by, let's say, other contexts, it seems to be that that's not the way we assume. We say, Misayayin Bo Mamish. So the Ritva, you saw the Ritva is also on the Marma Komos. The Ritva has a couple of approaches to this. On the one hand, it could be that there's Misayayin and there's Misayayin. There's big time Misayayin and there's little time Misayayin. So, for example, you're going to put lotion, you're going to put something in the eye, so all he has to do is open up his eye. So people blink all the time. They open and close their eyes all the time. It's just not a very significant act of siyua. While if you're going to have a haircut, you have to sit in a very specific position and you have to angle in a very specific position. And therefore, that really is significant siyua.
Is the Ritva saying that the natural blinking is also considered siyua, but it's not enough to be considered a mamish or whatever?
Well, it's probably as a semantic question, because it's if it is misayay, it's the misayay that typifies ain't bo mamish. So it's either not misayay or misayay ain't bo mamish. Either way, it comes out to
the
same.
Well, I guess the question would be then, other natural actions such as opening and closing your mouth or something like that.
Right. So where you draw the line would still be the question, but what he means when he identifies this is more of a semantic question. So the other possibility he has is that maybe this is a chiddush by the Isser of Nikaf, that when we talk about Teis, so we have a pasuk that tells us that this is the nature of the Isser. But it doesn't mean that in other areas we say Misayaya is significant. So these 2 days in the Ritva,
what was the second one?
That it's a chiddush by Teis, cutting off Teis. The Gemara says that the Makif and the Nikaf are both Chayiv. That's the chiddush of the specific Isser, that's the nature of the Isser. The Isser is somebody who would perform this act of cutting, and the Isser is the one who's wearing it willingly. The one who's willingly allowing it to happen, the Isser is on him. That's the nature.
So Misayaya ain't bo mamish for this case.
Correct. And maybe this is, here the Siyua is itself the Isser, while other things you may have a different kind of principle for.
I read it differently. I read it like, I'm saying it's
right. No, it might be right.
That the guy is getting his haircut is doing Isser Doraisa, so Isser Doraisa.
So
over there it's Durabana.
Yeah, that could also be an element, and that's also discussed. At this point, you seem to be focusing on the nature of the Isser, specifically the rights of Nikaf, is that. That's what it seems like he's saying.
I mean, the way I read it also is similar to that, but part of it is that when you have a bigger lav, such as a Del Raisa, then you only need a little bit. Each of them are equally Messiah.
But the Siyuah takes on a different level when it's Deraisa. Right. It could be some truth to that also, but I think he's focusing specifically on the nature of this Isser Deraisa. But in any event, so this could have, however you read it, it could have a nafkamina for the whole question in Shabbos. So how do you view sticking out your fingernails? Is that a minor Siyuah or a major Siyuah, or is it not matter when it comes to Shabbos because it's only an Isser by Nikaf? So whatever answer the Ritva takes, whatever answer you take in general to address this Dira, is going to affect the application to other areas, and is going to be relevant to this Machlokas, the Taz, and the Shach, and others. So essentially, if you put this together with other things that we've said, there also is room to say that especially when it comes to Shabbos, that Misayaya is Ein Bo Mamish, because again, if we're very Maisa focused, so then we could say that Misayaya means that you help something to happen. So are you liable for that or are you not liable for that? But if you see when it comes to Shabbos that we don't really focus so much on your bringing about a malacha, we say that min ha-Torah amir la'akum is mutter, we focus on you being the guy doing it. So if we have a scenario where one other person is doing it and you're simply non-crucial assistance, so then all the more so when it comes to Shabbos, misayaya in bo'mamish.
The Taz has a different
feeling. Correct, seems. Right. But the whole machlokus about whether we should even worry about a misayaya when it comes to this Isser of Goat, there's a lot of other reasons also why the question might be complicated. But just even the basics, is there an Isser? Is we say misayaya imbo mamish, or do we say misayaya yeshbo mamish? So that plugs into a lot of things. It plugs into halacha l'maaseh about Shabbos. It plugs into this whole lumdus about what the Isser of Shabbos is. And since it's a crucial part of the Shnayim Shaso question, so then it affects that as well. All right. So any question about that? We'll say a few minutes about the sugya and Daf Dalet. We'll run out of time soon. Maybe we'll just introduce that sugya, and we'll have to say a little bit more about it next time. But any questions about this so far? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Gemara and Daf Dalet. I'll have to just basically give the basic background, and then we'll continue. The sugya on Daf Dalet is important to see because it has a lot of ramifications, both Shabbos-specific ramifications, Malacha-specific ramifications, and also by invoking this whole sugya of Chatei Kedei Sheyizke, whether we mean sin on your own behalf or sin on behalf of somebody else, two different concepts, related but possibly very different concepts. So that's a major Kol Torah Kula sugya. So we didn't want to leave the first parak of Shabbos without looking at this Gemara. So just to get down some of the basics, so the Gemara talks about the following question. That let's say you have a person who has hidbik pas bitanur, a person has started the process of baking bread. So in the time of the Gemara, the way they would do it is just the language of you glued the bread to the oven. So that's the way they used to do it, that the bread was stuck to the wall of the oven. That's how it baked. And when it was finished, it had to be removed from the wall of the oven. That's called Radias Hapas. So Radias Hapas is not a malacha. The Gemara calls it, in fact, a chachma v'ena malacha. It's not a malacha. It's a skill, but it doesn't have the status of a malacha. But the Chazal prohibited it. It's an Issa d'Rabbanan. So the fact that there is such an Issa d'Rabbanan then provokes the following question. So if you have an Issa d'Rabbanan to take out the bread from the oven, to take the bread down from the oven walls, so you could find yourself in the following clash. That what happens if one put bread in the oven be'isser? So now, if he allows it to stay there, he's looking at a chiyuv skila, if he did it on purpose. He's looking at a korban, if it was an accident. So should we perhaps stop this process in the middle? The problem is, you might say normally, yeah, for sure. But if you're going to do that, so then you have to violate the Sisa D'Rabbanan. So the Gemara wants to know, do we recommend that you should do that, that you should violate this Isser D'Rabbanan to save yourself from the Isser D'Raisa? And then the question also gets more complicated. What if you're not looking at an Isser D'Raisa, it's somebody else's Isser D'Raisa? So now should we say that you should commit this small Avera in order to prevent somebody else from violating a bigger Isser? And how does Shogeg and Mezid fit in? There are all kinds of details here. If the other person is a Shogeg, so maybe he wouldn't be looking at any Onish anyway, and you are going to have to do this little Avera of the Mezid, so should we allow you to do a little Avera to prevent somebody else from a Shogeg, which isn't going to have any consequences for him anyway? So what exactly is the whole story here? So there are a lot of moving parts, as you can see. But this also, I don't want to start this point today because it will be a longer point, but it also seems to suggest that big chiddush, that this malacha, maybe all malachos, have the ability to be interrupted in the middle. And what does that say about malachos in general? What does it say about the malacha of Bishul / Afia? What does it say about how the malachas relate to each other? This sugya is a major portal into a lot of things. So we'll leave most of those for next time. I'll just mention one point now because it's shorter and it's interesting. So Tosfos raised the question, if you saw Tosfos, I don't know if I put this Tosfos in the Maamar Makomos or not, but I'll just mention this point, that Tosfos says that, well, what are you going to do? If the guy, if you can tell, let's say a person puts it in and he did it b'mezit, so he's looking at a chi of skila. Right? So who's going to listen to you to accept a chi of skila if you tell him there's an issur d'rabbanan to take it down? So he's going to say, that's very nice, but I'm saving myself from skila, so I'm going to take this down no matter what you say. Right? That makes sense. So Tosfos seems to assume that whatever happens, there isn't going to really be a chi of skila here. So why not? So there is a fascinating comment by the aforementioned Kutcher Glover Rav, the Sefer Eretz Tzvi, not to be confused with the Eretz HaTzvi. We've gone back and forth between the two Sfarim today. So in the Eretz Tzvi, he suggests as follows. He says, when it comes to Misas Bezdin, so we have an assumption that tshuva is not effective. Right? That even though we believe so wholeheartedly in tshuva, and we say that tshuva can accomplish anything, but that's all true klapei shmaya, that vis-a-vis God, you can do tshuva and he forgives you. But Bezdin Shalmata will impose its own shin even if the person does tshuva. And truth is, it's especially if it does tshuva, that's a kapara that comes together with tshuva. It's not even effective without tshuva. So, Achronim discuss why that is. Why shouldn't the Bezdin Shalmata accept tshuva? If we believe in tshuva as a principle, so why does Bezdin not accept it? This is a discussion of the tshuva's Nadav Yehuda.
Does everybody agree that it's not accepted?
That seems to be the principle. The question is why. Rav Yosef Engel talks about this in one of his Sfarim. Rabbi Yehuda talks about this. It's a discussion in a number of places. So some suggest, there are various, I think it's an interesting sugya by itself, but there's so many little ripple sugyas that come out of this one half amud on the Avdalah that we can't really devote enough time to all of them. But just, this is really a tangent of a tangent, so I'll mention it briefly. But some suggest that really we should accept tshuva. But what are we going to do? Right? Everyone's going to claim tshuva. That's the whole point. And that's it. Go to all the death rows. Everyone's going to claim tshuva if it'll get them out of the onesh. So there's no way for Bezdin Shalmata to know that the tshuva is sincere. So therefore, we just can't factor it in. That Bezdin Shalmata has to work as if there is no concept of tshuva, even though theoretically it should have made sense, it should have been applicable. So says the Kutcher Glover Rav, that's normally true. Normally a person cannot necessarily be credited as being a genuine Baal tshuva. But here, this is pretty impressive, right? That here, what's the Averi he's doing tshuva for? He's doing tshuva for Chil Shabbos. And here, now all of a sudden he's so from that he keeps the Drabbanas for Chil Shabbos, even when it puts him at risk of skila. So this is the one case where a person can actually be demonstrated as a genuine Baal Tshuva. That a minute ago he was ready to be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. Here, now he's so from that he's ready to be Moser Nefesh for the Drabanans. So this person is for sure a Baal Tshuva, and Bezdin Shalmata can accept his Tshuva.
Unless he's wrong, and he should have violated the Drabanan in order to say
But even so, his spirit, he's willing to do it for that purpose. He's willing to be mekabel this...
Sounds like a cousin Shota in a little bit.
Well, even if he is, but he's still a Baal Tshuva. It could be both, right? Not getting into that whole analysis, but it could be both true. It could be that he's wrong, doing the wrong thing, but the attitude that's motivating him is an attitude of Tshuva. We discussed, maybe a little bit last semester, 2 years ago, that there's a very unusual gezeirah in Hilchos Shabbos. It talks about you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos because we're concerned about kotzer. But then there's also a knas that if you do climb a tree, b'mezid, so then we don't let you come down. And we discussed at the time that there's a lot of exceptions to that rule. It makes it almost never really applicable. So one of the questions you could ask on top of all the exceptions is, what exactly is the scenario here? That this person was willing to go up on the tree b'mezid again, knowingly against the Yisod Rabbanan, but now he's going to be so frum that he's not going to come down because he's observing the Yisod Rabbanan, which is much more awkward for him to stay up in the tree all of Shabbos. So presumably this guy's a Baal Tshuva too. And if he's a Baal Tshuva, so then one can make a case that that makes his mezid kishogeg and the knas doesn't apply anyway. So it's a little bit of a self-negating knas. And when exactly this comes up, I'm not sure. So in a similar way, you could say that here, his willingness to adhere to this din d'rabbanan is itself an act of tshuva for the initial aveira, so he's not going to be subject to skila. Beis Din Shamata can recognize that too.
I don't know if you want to get into that case, but there's guilt in an aveira, which can change the person's...
Sorry?
There's guilt in an aveira, which can change the person's mindset.
Right, okay, so it could happen, but the question is, if a person... No, but let's say he is. But if a person does do tshuva in between, so now that could retroactively make his initial act to be a shogeg. We find that in Hilchos Tefillah that, without again time, I'm not going to go into all the details. But if shogeg, if tshuva makes an avera, the Gemara says in the end of Yuma that tshuva either makes an avera into a mitzvah if it's really tshuva me'ava, or at least it makes an avera into a shogeg. So if a person climbed the tree b'shogeg, we let him go down anyway. So if his tshuva turns his initial act into shogeg, the whole knas shouldn't apply. And the only person who would adhere to such a knas presumably must have done tshuva on his initial avera, a very similar type of svar, that here he went up there in the first place against the din d'rabbanan, and now... Sorry?
If he was guilty, he didn't do tshuva, you'd have to stay up there.
But if he is guilty enough to motivate tshuva...
He changed his mind because of guilt.
Right, but that is also part of tshuva, right? That he decides now he's changing his path. A minute ago, he violated the Yisod Rabbanan and climbing up the tree in the first place. You think, is that a complete Baal Tshuva?
I think guilt is a prime thing, where as opposed to naturally, people do avera, they have this natural guilt.
But he's also acting on it. He's refusing to do the avera again. You know, he's being confronted. That's what the Rambam says, a true Baal Tshuva is confronted with the avera again and doesn't do it. So now it's at greater cost himself. He's not coming down. So that presumably is an act of tshuva. Along the line of what the Kajav Lev is saying here.
So to see a missing.
There probably is, right? What's a knas on the original gezeirah? Seems like it's very specific. So in any event, just thought that was an interesting point that Kajal Lever has about this Tosfos, which mentioned it now because it's the shorter of the points. But when we come back to this point, so we'll have to consider all the various implications here. What does the sugya say about Malacha Shabbos in general, about the specific Malacha, about the relationship between Malachas, and then that very important issue, Chatei Kidei Sheyizkeh, and all the elements therein. God willing, we will pursue that next time. But first, Malachas Machshavas and Parshas Vayakil on our agenda for tomorrow. And even before that, Mincha on our agenda for now. Fine, what is that for us? Okay, Ashrei Shabbos Achad, Ruchas Allah.